Emimet is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashimi Nejad. Please stay tuned.
چگونه تربیت می‌کردند دیگران را؟
How did the Shia imams and the ulama teach people moral lessons? One way was practicing what they preach. They were paragons of good morals. A believer must be kind to others. He must be patient against the insult of others. If a believer is patient in critical moments of life, his behavior can be a practical lesson for others.
پیغمبر اکرم و امیر المؤمنین علی علیه السلام فرمان که مؤمن
In a hadith, Prophet Muhammad told Imam Ali علیه السلام, A believer's faith is complete if he or she possesses 103 attributes. And O Ali, the best attribute of a faithful Muslim is his patience in difficult situations. This hadith of Prophet Muhammad shows that patience is the king among the main features of a believer in Islam, and without patience, faith has no value in Islam. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashim Nejad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Dear listeners, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of your favorite program, Youth Station. This is IRB English Radio and I am Asma.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, and this is Hassanin.
Yes, I'm happy to be here with you again, brother. How are you doing?
It's my pleasure. I'm good, alhamdulillah. How are you?
Thank God.
What's the fiery topic for today?
It's very trending.
What
nowadays, everybody is talking about it. It is about ChatGPT.
I use my phone like Instagram, Google, Facebook. Mm-hmm. Everywhere I see ChatGPT, YouTube, ChatGPT.
So what is it?
Everyone's talking about it. So, and there's so many people, I guess, you know, they're not aware of ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's go, let's start, step by step. Let me open Google. Let me search. What is ChatGPT? ChatGPT is an artificial intelligence AI chatbot developed by OpenAI. ChatGPT is a natural language processing tool driven by AI technology that allows you to have human-like conversations and much more with the chatbot.
Mm-hmm.
The language model can answer your questions and assist you with tasks like composing emails, essays, and code, etc.
Yeah.
So we got a basic idea about
the gist of it.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence that could do everything for you.
Yeah, so it's, you can ask anything.
Through language and photos.
Yeah, so the different, this ChatGPT is normal, just texting messages.
Yeah.
And there are also other softwares which can show you the pictures and
exactly.
Which can give you the images.
I was just saying the whole idea about this generative intelligence, I guess.
So it's basically like, like Siri and Alexa that we had in our phones.
Yeah.
It's got just much smarter.
Yeah. And it would answer all your questions.
Yeah, all your questions. It has a vast information in it. So it has gathered a lot of information.
Yeah.
A lot of data from years and years. And now it, gives you answers like
and
that.
And, it sounds very, shocking, horrifying. Terrifying.
Maybe it sounds great.
Yeah, but still, if just imagine you're a teacher and you have too many students.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to trust them? They're doing their homeworks.
Okay, yeah. There's also a breakthrough for that, for loophole. There's one more software. So
mm-hmm.
since this ChatGPT has come out, you have your, homeworks. You have to write essays and all.
Exactly.
So,
thesis or whatever.
So, students, ChatGPT is like, it's so... it saves your time, so...
It can do your math for you.
Write me an essay. It's so convenient these days. So, when you get a homework and teacher tells you to write an essay on maybe your best friend.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is just, you open ChatGPT and tell the bot, write me an essay on best friend. And it gives you the whole
and
essay, like 200 words, 300 words.
In just some minutes.
Yeah, so, and this is not recommended in any way.
Mm.
So you won't learn things if you just use the ChatGPT or the chatbot.
Yeah.
So, and...
It's still
so what is a teacher supposed to do now?
Yeah.
And the essay that it gives you is like, it's written by someone human. When you read it, you don't understand that it's given by a software. So there's also a breakthrough for that. There are many softwares that you take that essay and you write, upload it on a different software.
Yeah.
And it tells you if it's written by an AI.
Okay, too much to take in. I guess it's the best time to go for a break. Let me digest it and then we'll have more of this discussion. Welcome back. You are still listening to Youth Station. Brother Hassanin and I are talking about ChatGPT, and I said it might be a little bit of dangerous and terrifying because nobody would do their task by their own selves if they know the abilities that these applications would have.
Yeah, as I mentioned, you know, the teachers, you know, there's always a different way.
Yeah.
You know, if the students, they're using ChatGPT to do their homework. So there's also software, you know, which tells you if it's done by AI. But unfortunately, not many teachers know about this.
So I don't know if I remember it true or not, but I guess you were a seminary student.
Yeah.
So, and this ChatGPT is going to answer your religious questions as well.
Yeah, so, that's kind of scary. Now yeah. that gets scary.
Wouldn't it tempt you to use it as your scholar?
No, I've never used it, you know, for this, you know, for these reasons. But if, you know, ChatGPT is good, you know, some of the things are good and some of the things are bad. You know, every coin has two sides.
Exactly.
There's a good side, there's a bad side.
It depends on the way you use it.
Yeah, how you use it. It's basically a software, right? It's a weapon. You can use it in a good way or a bad way.
Yeah.
But definitely, okay, let me mention that, you know, ChatGPT is also available in different languages.
Exactly.
You know, like English, Persian, Arabic, Hindi, Urdu.
That many, many languages.
Yeah, many, many languages.
Yeah.
So you can also ask any Islamic question, like religious question, and you get the answer.
Exactly.
And not, you know, necessarily right all the time. It might be right. It might.
So this is how it goes. You are a special user. You open an application or a website that is ChatGPT, and then you go there. You ask your question in whatever language you like, and then you get whatever you want to hear.
So, you know, that's actually the dangerous side of it. That's, you know, that we need to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, even when it gives you, like, you know, religious answers, when it gives answers to your religious questions, people tend to, you know, suffice with ChatGPT for the Islamic questions.
Yeah, but that's not enough.
That's not just enough, but it always doesn't give you the right answers.
Yeah.
ChatGPT gives you the answers based on the information it has stored in it.
It is true that it's a human-like sort of experience.
Yeah, and so...
But it's not totally the whole truth.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this leads sometimes people sufficing to ChatGPT for their doubts and queries rather than, you know... going to the, you know, resident alim or the scholar.
See, Google was not enough. Now we have ChatGPT as well.
Yeah. So, and this thing is recommended. You know, I'm addressing to the Muslim youth, and please do not take your Islam from ChatGPT. You know, you always need to be under the supervision of a good scholar.
And not just that. I guess in many areas, you shouldn't trust that fully. Because still, whatever you can read in the books, whatever you can get through your search, through your research, is going to be totally different from what you get from that ChatGPT thing.
You can get, you know, basic information, you know. It can help you in a lot of ways.
Of course. It can be used as a helper, but not as the main source for every single thing.
Yeah, not the main source. You cannot be completely dependent upon ChatGPT.
Exactly.
You can take help from it, and it saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
Like, for example, suppose the other day I was with my friend, and he wanted to make a documentary on Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, he, you know, wrote on ChatGPT, you know, give
so
me a list.
So you write your question in Turkey and then you would have an entire essay in Turkish.
No, like he was, you know, trying to make a documentary.
Yeah.
So he wanted to see like what all documentaries have been made until now. So he wrote, you know, give me a list of all the documentaries that have been made on Turkey. So he got a list. You know, that's actually the, you know, the good thing is Google, it's different from Google, right? So when you Google something, it gets different so websites, like, yeah. you know, the keywords
this
you search
would give
for.
You the gist.
Yeah, like it will get different website and you have to search for the answer on the different websites. But it's like, you know, like human-like conversations, as we mentioned earlier. So when you write something, you get one answer for the question you have asked.
Yeah.
So definitely it saves a lot of time in different fields for different things. But you cannot completely suffice on it, because what I feel is a robot can, or a chatbot can never replace a human being.
Of course, yeah. But still, this application is going to do too much. As you just said, it's going to save too much of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I guess, convenient.
The drawbacks of this ChatGPT, as I mentioned, you know, people will no longer...
Tend to read books,
exactly.
To enroll different classes, to learn things.
There even the few people on the internet, they say that, you know, I don't need to study anymore. I don't need to go to the college. You know, if I have any question, I have to go to ChatGPT. I'll just write on ChatGPT and I'll get the answer.
Why do I have to go through a drudgery when I can get it to all the same little box? So everything is going to be solved when you use it. But right now, let's go for a break. And after that, I will mention something.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
This is the finale, I guess this is the ending part of today's episode, but before we finish it, let's go for the gist of whatever we said. And also, I said I'm going to mention a point, which was about the elderly, the old people who do not know how to use internet, how they're going to continue their lives. Because as it seems so, according to the metaverse, and then we have right now ChatGPT, you know, everything is like a virtual world.
Yeah, and I feel, you know, this ChatGPT is a revolution in the history of, you know, search engines like Google and Yahoo and different search engines. And it's a revolution, you know, for a chatbot. You know, it's actually jaw-dropping when you actually, you know, access ChatGPT and how it works, how it gives you information. Just every information is right just one click away.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But you have to have the knowledge of how to use net or these things. You know what I mean? I mean,
oh, yeah, basically,
for
you know, you need
people,
to make an account.
It's going to be difficult.
Yeah, you need to make an account. And once your account is made, and, you know, everything is just one click away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it has so much of good points. Of course, as you mentioned, it's a revolutionary invention. But still, there's some people, even right now, do not know how to use it, how to make use of it. Maybe they do not know what is it. But I guess we already gave enough of definitions about it.
Yeah.
So, as we just talked about it, it's an artificial intelligence. It would give you everything by just clicking whatever you want. You just write down your questions and then you would get the answers. Whether you're a student, you want to solve your math questions, or you're a scholar, you want to read different essays or whatever. Or even you want to learn a new talent. You want to learn sewing, perhaps cooking, whatever. It would give you the...
Anything,
yeah.
Like even if you write something, you know, if you write an article, if you write a blog or an essay.
Yeah.
And you upload it on ChatGPT and it makes it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it, you know...
So what about plagiarism?
If there are any errors, like grammatical errors or, you know, anything, it... Correct, sir.
What about plagiarism? What would happen to it?
Okay, so the first thing is, you know, you're not taking someone else's property. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't belong to a specific person.
Yeah.
You're taking it from ChatGPT. So that's a different thing, you know.
Yeah.
You're taking someone else's content and, you know, showcasing it as it's
It's
your
so
own.
Interesting.
So you won't be copyrighted for that.
Yeah, yes, but still as a teacher and as a scholar, that would be so, I don't know what to call it. It's shocking. That was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you got what is ChatGPT. And, well, every single one can make use of it very easily, just with a click. And, yeah, life is changing so much, so rapidly, that we cannot grasp the new things that happen. It's so speedy.
The world's changing.
Yeah, take care of yourself in this speedy world. Do not let anything change you into a worst creature. So, thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. In California, United States, a reparations panel has approved a report that could mean billions of dollars for black residents. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. California's Reparations Task Force voted on Saturday, 6th of May, to approve recommendations on how the state may compensate and apologize to black residents for generations of harm caused by discriminatory policies. The nine-member committee, which first convened nearly 2 years ago, gave final approval at a meeting in Oakland, California, to a hefty list of proposals that now go to state lawmakers to consider for reparations legislation. U.S. Representative Barbara Lee, a Democrat from Oakland, who is co-sponsoring a bill in Congress to study restitution proposals for African Americans, at the meeting called on states and the federal government to pass reparations legislation. Reparations are not only morally justifiable, but they have the potential to address long-standing racial disparities and inequalities, Barbara Lee said. The panel's first vote approved a detailed account of historical discrimination against black Californians in areas such as voting, housing, education, disproportionate policing, and incarceration, and others. Other recommendations on the table range from creation of a new agency to approve services to descendants of enslaved people to calculations on what the state owes them in compensation. An apology and an admission of wrongdoing just by itself is not going to be satisfactory, said Chris Lodgson, an organizer with the Coalition for a Just and Equitable California, a reparations advocacy group. An apology crafted by lawmakers must include a censure of the gravest barbarities carried out on behalf of the state, according to the draft recommendation approved by the task force. Those would include a condemnation of former governor Peter Hardman Burnett, the state's first elected governor, and a white supremacist who encouraged laws to exclude black people from California. After California entered the Union in 1850 as a free state, it did not enact any laws to guarantee freedom for all Californians, the draft recommendation notes. On the contrary, the state Supreme Court enforced the Federal Fugitive Slave Act, which allowed for the capture and return of runaway enslaved people until for over a decade, until emancipation. By participating in these horrors, California further perpetuated the harms African Americans faced, imbuing racial prejudice throughout society through segregation, public and private discrimination, and unequal dispersal of state and federal funding, the document says. The task force approved a public apology acknowledging California's responsibility for past wrongdoings and promising the state will not repeat them. It will be issued in the presence of people whose ancestors were enslaved. California has previously apologized for placing Japanese Americans in internment camps during the Second World War and for violence against and mistreatment of Native Americans. The panel also approved a section of the draft report saying reparations should include cash or its equivalent for eligible residents. More than 100 residents and advocates gathered at Mills College of Northeastern University in Oakland, California, a city that is the birthplace of the Black Panther movement. They shared frustrations over the country's broken promise to offer up to 40 acres and a mule to newly freed enslaved people. Many said it is past time for government to repair the harms that have kept African Americans from living without fear of being wrongfully prosecuted, retaining property and building wealth. Elaine Brown, former Black Panther Party chairwoman, urged people to express their frustration through demonstrations. Saturday's task force meeting marked a crucial moment in the long fight for local, state, and federal government to atone for discriminatory policies against African Americans. The proposals are far from implementation, however. There is no way in the world that many of these recommendations are going to get through because of the inflationary impact, said Roy Brooks, a professor and reparations scholar at the University of San Diego School of Law in California. Some estimates from economists have projected that the state could owe upwards of $800 billion, or more than 2.5 times its annual budget, in reparations to African Americans. The figure in the latest draft report released by the task force is far lower, however. The group has not responded to email and phone requests for comment. The Secretary of State, Shirley Weber, a former Democratic Assembly member, authored legislation in 2020 creating the task force with a focus on the state's historical culpability for harm against African Americans, and not as a substitute for any additional reparations that may come from the federal government. The Fox News Channel has also covered this story. The state of California's first-in-the-nation reparations task force has voted to approve recommendations for how the state should compensate and apologize to African Americans in response to slavery. The 9-member committee that has been deliberating on the recommendations for 2 years voted in Oakland, California on Saturday, 6th of May. To give its final approval to an extensive report that offers proposals that will then go to the state lawmakers in Sacramento to consider for reparations legislation. The California Task Force recommendations range from creation of a new agency to provide services to descendants of enslaved people to tailored calculations of what the state owes residents for issues like housing discrimination and police brutality. The task force approved a public apology acknowledging the state's responsibility for past wrongdoing and promising the state will not repeat them. It would be issued in the presence of people whose ancestors were enslaved. The committee will meet one more time on 29th of June this year in Sacramento to officially hand over the final report to the state legislature. The task force did not put forward an official price tag, which will be ironed out by the legislature, but experts believe the cost could reach into billions of dollars. The report does include projection restitution estimates and suggestions as to who would qualify for these payments. Economists predicted in a preliminary estimate in March that California's reparations plan would cost the state more than $800 billion. The task force, which consulted five economists and policy experts to arrive at the number, said at the time that the total didn't include compensation for property that the group says was taken unjustly or for the devaluation of black-owned businesses. California's total annual state budget sits at roughly $300 billion. Earlier this week, however, the task force published its latest proposals, which don't contain an overall price tag, but instead outline ways California could calculate how much money black residents have lost since 1850, when the state was established, through to today due to discrimination. Whatever the final figures, it's unclear how California would afford to pay millions of dollars to each eligible black resident of the state. California Governor Gavin Newsom announced in January that the state faces a projected budget deficit of $22.5 billion for the coming fiscal year. Just weeks later, the California Legislative Analyst Office, a government agency that analyzes the budget for the state legislature, estimated in a subsequent report that Gavin Newsom's forecast undershot the mark by about $7 billion.
This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how can we feel happy and delighted? In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, may his peace and blessings be upon Muhammad and his pure, immaculate Ahlul Bayt. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to A to Z on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We are going to start our program with a question. And that is, how can I smile when I do not feel happy and or delighted inside myself? I want to be active and not sad and idle. Would you please tell me how I could arrive at this aim? Very good question. To answer this question, first, let your conscience be satisfied and at ease, because this is the thing that makes you smile and feel real cheerfulness. This comes from believing Allah and the following what He has revealed to His Messenger and what infallible Imams alayhimussalam have declared. They have declared that believing in Allah, contentment, and avoiding greediness brings man mental relief, and being satisfied with one's fate increases and solidates that relief. If you obtain this relief through these religious beliefs, problems and troubles will not deprive you of your smile and you will not worry at all. Allah the Almighty says in the Holy Quran, and be not infirm and be not grieving, and you shall have the upper hand if you are believers.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein. حسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن
Ali wa Hussein wa
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to A to Z, IRIB English Radio, Color of Islam page. In the previous part, we talked about the ways of feeling happy and delighted and also feeling the cheerfulness in our life. And the main factor and the main way is believing in Allah and following the rules that He has relieved to His Messenger and what the infallible Imams alayhi salatu wasalam has declared in our ahadith. So, religion has declared that serving people, helping the needy, and fulfilling the rights of one's family cause the relief of one's conscience. Looking at the green nature, pondering on the stars, listening to the singing of birds, and also listening to good maxim makes man happy and delighted. When man achieves some success in one of his aims, he feels happy and cheerfulness, which affects his activities, and a smile appears on his face. Islam has encouraged all that because it is the religion of activeness, vigor, progress, production, and not of laziness, worry, burden, and grief. Inshallah, I hope everyone feel happiness and cheerfulness in his or her life. Thank you for listening to us.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
IRIB English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
At a time when economic conditions in Britain are their worst in the last half a century, due to several consecutive crises, the coronation ceremony of King Charles III was held at a cost of more than £250 million. There was also a huge operation to ensure the security at the coronation. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Hill has covered this story and tells us more. The coronation of King Charles III in London's historic Westminster Abbey, the first in the United Kingdom for seven decades, drew thousands of people into the streets to protest against the antiquated monarchical system. The King and Queen Camilla were formally crowned on Saturday, 6th of May, at a ceremony attended by more than 2,000 guests, including world leaders, aristocrats and celebrities. Trumpets sounded inside the medieval Westminster Abbey and the congregation shouted, "God save the king!" And outside in the streets, thousands of troops, tens of thousands of spectators, and thousands of protesters converged. The Metropolitan Police deployed some 11,500 police officers for one of its biggest ever security operations for the day of the coronation. Condemnations poured in after the arrest of leading members of the anti-monarchy group, The Republic. The Metropolitan Police, Britain's largest police force, had warned it would have an extremely low threshold for protests and controversially planned to use mass facial recognition technology to monitor the crowds. The police force wrote on Twitter recently, "Our tolerance for any disruption, whether through protest or otherwise, will be low. We will deal robustly with anyone intent on undermining this celebration." The Metropolitan Police arrested the leader of the Republic and 51 others at the coronation, claiming that their duty to prevent disruption outweighs the right to protest. The American broadcaster ABC News has also covered this story. Demonstrators gathered among the 10-deep crowds lining the procession route in central London to stand out from those clad in red, white and blue and to hold up signs saying, "Not my king." The Republic group said its leader, Graham Smith, had been arrested by police before the procession began and police officers seized the placards of the protesters. A photo posted on Twitter showed that Graham Smith sitting on the ground surrounded by a group of police officers. An officer at the scene said several Republican protesters had been arrested. A Republic activist said in London's Trafalgar Square that they've arrested six of our organisers and seized hundreds of placards. They won't tell us why they've arrested them or where they're being held. Yasmin Ahmed, the UK director of Human Rights Watch, condemned the arrest, saying the reports of people being arrested for peacefully protesting the coronation are incredibly alarming. Peaceful protests allow individuals to hold those in power to account, something that the British government seems increasingly averse to. Commander Karen Finlay of the London Metropolitan Police claimed in a statement, "We absolutely understand public concern following the arrest that we made this morning. Over the past 24 hours, there has been a significant police operation after we received information that protesters were determined to disrupt the coronation procession." Emmanuel Andrews of the human rights group Liberty said on Twitter, "We all have the right to go about our lives without being watched and monitored, but everyone at the coronation is at risk of having their faces scanned by oppressive facial recognition technology." The protests come amid growing concerns over the increase in police's power to stifle dissent in Britain, following the recent introduction of a controversial public order bill, which empowers British police to take stronger action against peaceful protesters. Parts of the legislation came into force on Wednesday, 3rd of May, just days ahead of the coronation. US President Joe Biden congratulated King Charles III and his queen, Queen Consort Camilla, on their coronation on Saturday. Joe Biden did not attend the ceremony. The United States was represented instead by the First Lady, Jill Biden. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Supporters and members of Britain's main anti-monarchy movement, The Republic, have rallied in London before the coronation of King Charles III on Saturday, 6th of May. Protester Colin Deer, a teacher, said, "I don't believe in hereditary monarchy, and I think this is costing a huge amount of money when lots of people are struggling and the economy is falling apart and the public services are awful, and we need to invest in that and not in King Charles III and his big coronation party. The Republic, a group founded in 1983 that campaigns for an elected head of state, said it believes that King Charles's accession to the throne presents their best chance of ending the monarchy in the United Kingdom. The protesters gathered mainly at Trafalgar Square along the procession route next to a statue of King Charles I, who was beheaded in 1649, leading to a short-lived republic. In recent interview with the Reuters news agency, the leader of the Republic group, Graham Smith, said he expected over 1,000 people dressed in yellow shirts to join the protests on Saturday, 6th of May, where they will hold placards and give speeches. An environmental protest group, Just Stop Oil, said that around 20 of its demonstrators were detained by police, including a 33-year-old doctor who was planning to peacefully hold a sign which read, "Just Stop Oil." 30-year-old Harry Stratton said the amount of public money being spent on a parade for someone who's already king, when there's homeless people sitting on the steps of Westminster Abbey right now, is crazy. Harry Stratton even said the police warned of shooting anyone who got in the way of their coronation. Amid the cost of living crisis that is bringing misery for millions of British people, there is criticism that the event should not have been publicly funded, and a question whether it will be money well spent. The recent opinion poll carried out by YouGov revealed that 52% of Londoners did not believe that the coronation should be paid for by the taxpayer. And another study by the National Centre for Social Research revealed that only 3 out of 10 Britons believe that the monarchy is very important. The expensive coronation ceremony comes as the latest figures show that Britain's inflation stands at over 10%, at its highest level in the past 4 decades. The inflationary spiral is growing at a much faster pace than the average pay rise across the country, with food prices skyrocketing in Britain almost by 20%. Increasing energy prices along with soaring energy costs have also largely contributed to Britain's cost of living crisis.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei in a meeting with Iranian officials and the ambassadors of Islamic countries on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr on April 22, 2023. So, what should the Islamic world strategy be regarding Palestine? Today, the Islamic world strategy regarding Palestine should be to help the forces inside that country. The resistance front's endeavours are, of course, valuable. Wherever they are, just like us, we too are standing up for the Palestinian issue. The resistance front's endeavours are valuable. These efforts should be focused on strengthening those who are fighting and risking their lives inside Palestine. The last point is the following. We need to truly pay attention to this point. What is the reason for the escalation of the internal struggles in Palestine? It is because of their inclination towards Islam. We had seen what their situation was like before, back when Islamic tendencies weren't popular among Palestinian groups. Now, some were communists and others were not communists, but they weren't Islamic. These developments did not exist.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
From the time that Islamic tendencies were born in the Palestinian resistance fighters, and from the time this tendency increased on a daily basis, continuing up until today, progress has been made in this manner, in the way the Palestinians fight. So the reason for their success is Islam. Islam. And the enemy has realized this. That's why you see them working against Islam around the world. They are all engaged in fighting Islam, doing all kinds of things. Of course, their fight against Islam will get nowhere. The Holy Quran states, do they seek to outmaneuver Allah? But it is the faithless who are the ones who are outmaneuvered. The Holy Quran, Surah 52, verse 42. They are making efforts, but the Almighty God will nullify their efforts. This is our duty today. The Islamic Republic recognized this duty from the very beginning. Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah alayh, pioneered this path. He considered the issue of Palestine to be the primary issue, or one of the primary issues, of the Islamic world. This movement started in the Islamic Republic from the time it was formed, and praise God, it is continuing. We hope that our dear nation, our people, and our youth will see the day when Muslims from around the world can freely perform their prayers in Quds. May God's greetings, mercy, and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Britain now has a new king. At the first coronation the world has seen in 70 years, the Archbishop of Canterbury crowned British royals Charles and Camilla at Westminster Abbey on Saturday, ushering in the reign of King Charles III. The main focus of British state media was the splendour and grandeur of the spectacle. However, controversy still surrounded the day. Anti-monarchy activists belonging to the peaceful Not My King protest movement were rounded up and arrested ahead of the coronation. The arrests included group leaders.
It's a completely peaceful demonstration. The police, without telling us why, without telling us where they're taking them, have arrested all the rallying organisers. Like, they've seized all our placards. It feels like something out of a police state because we still don't know why anyone's been arrested and we still don't know where they're taking our people. You know? Britain's meant to be a democracy, but Charles isn't treating it like one.
Even before the event took place, criticism of the royal family remained relatively widespread. A survey by the National Centre for Social Research showed public support for the monarchy has fallen to a historic low. A total of 45% of respondents said either it should be abolished, was not at all important, or not very important. Young people particularly expressed embarrassment over the institution's continued existence. Elsewhere, similar polling revealed that many of the King's subjects across the Commonwealth would vote to remove the UK monarch as their head of state, raising speculation that more nations will ditch the Commonwealth in the near future. The ongoing cost of living crisis, undemocratic power, and seemingly endless scandals are among the many reasons experts believe the UK royals' popularity has plummeted.
I don't think anyone can be happy, especially looking at the economic state right now. Well, you only have to go out in the streets and some of the famous streets in London and look how many people are suffering and sleeping on the streets. And that is quite embarrassing and appalling for any sort of government, let alone a monarchy, to be proud to celebrate and spend that amount of money when people are suffering.
Why there are many mainstream platforms. So what the royal family stand for today might be different, but it's very, very difficult to erase history. And they have to respect that a large portion of the public still connect them to, let's say, some incredibly sad, vicious and violent times.
The new monarch now faces many challenges, and they're not just including the social, economic and political crises which plague the nation, but also the deep divisions within his own family as well. Depending on how the king handles these many crises, could heavily impact the fight for survival that the royal institution now finds itself in. Robert Carter, Windsor.
Showing absolutely no remorse. These are the confessions of the man that led the Harakat al-Nizal separatist group, responsible for several terrorist operations in Iran that left over 450 casualties in a span of 15 years.
According to our plan, our members received military training. That is because we wanted to give the impression that Harakat al-Nizal is strong and can carry out military operations. We even started our activities with an attack on the governor's office inside the city in a residential area.
Based on the theory that the end justifies the means, the Swedish-backed terrorist ringleader masterminded one of the deadliest terror attacks in Iran. In 2018, the attack on a military parade in the southwestern city of Ahvaz killed at least 25 people and injured 70 others, many of which were civilian onlookers.
You could say that all of those who were killed or injured in the attacks were ordinary civilians. We really didn't care. Even many of them were Arabs, and that was okay. We just wanted everyone to know about us. We want people to know Harakat al-Nizal.
The Harakat al-Nizal terror group has been pushing to separate the southwestern province of Khuzestan, which is home to Iran's Arab population.
Arab, Turk, or Persian. We are all Iranians and we will always remain united.
I took part in this funeral to show my support for the Islamic Republic and our leader Ayatollah Khamenei. We are one and nobody can divide us.
Today, I came here to send a message that we will always remain united.
Habib Farajullah Cha'ab, nicknamed Habib Osaivand, head of the terrorist group, was arrested in 2020. He stood trial in 2022, where he pleaded guilty and was convicted and sentenced to death. Iran's Supreme Court upheld the death sentence, and he was executed on May 6th. His mission remains a failed plot. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
A vigil was held in Gaza denouncing the latest Israeli crimes in Nablus, which led to the killing of three Palestinian men and a woman. Israeli occupation forces raided Nablus city on Thursday morning and assassinated three freedom fighters. Israeli army claims that the victims are responsible for the resistance operation in the Jordan Sea last month. People from all walks of life in the besieged Gaza city came out in solidarity with the West Bank against the Israeli regime's atrocities, confirming their utter support for the Palestinian resistance in the West Bank.
Those who were killed by the Israeli occupation were defending the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and killing them in cold blood is a war crime committed by the Zionist criminals. These crimes would only increase the Palestinian resistance actions and strengthen their unity against the occupation forces.
Al-Ghul insisted on the unity of the Palestinian resistance factions in Gaza and the West Bank.